books.
Are you Stan?
Yeah.
Okay. Cool.
Not listening.
No, you could listen. This book had zero sex in it, so we won't even blush about it. We're actually...
Really?
Yeah, this was...
I know. That's how I got to the end of it. I was like, I was robbed.
I know. You were at the end of it. I was in the middle, and you're like, so zero sex. And I was like, God damn it, no. I needed something to talk about.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so...
All right, got it.
You got it.
Yep.
Okay. Hello, and welcome to We're Reading Dirty Books. This is Saylet.
And this is Kalina.
And welcome back to our paranormal romance
podcast
where we read paranormal romance novels and talk about them.
That is what we do.
That is
yes.
It. That's, yeah. So, yes. What's up? What, you look like you're about to say something.
I was. Should we do our quick icebreaker?
Sure.
Okay.
Let's do it.
Would you rather be able to fly or be able to breathe underwater?
Oh, I think you already know the answer to this one.
We'd be terrible podcasters if we don't know each other this well.
Well, I hate water.
I know.
I'm not a water person.
I know.
I will bury myself in the sand on the beach and stay there all day and never touch the water. I'd fly. I would absolutely fly. No question about that.
Mm-hmm. So wrong answer. The correct answer was, I would rather be able to breathe underwater.
I wonder if we're going to like match any quickie. Is our any of our quickies going to be the same?
Someday, maybe.
Because they were different, the first one.
Yeah.
Well, you're like, you learned how to swim before you learned
how to walk. Yep. It's
so
much more important.
In our landlocked state.
Our landlocked state of Colorado. You got to know how to swim. You never know when you will not encounter water.
I mean, I guess you have to learn how to do things that are possible to do
mm-hmm.
versus I will never learn how to fly.
No, so, that's true.
Yeah.
I don't have any interest in flying. I feel like people would be way more bothered by how cold and windy and buggy it is than they think that they would be.
For sure. I think there'd be a lot of
clouds would
with
be
that.
Cold.
No, for sure.
And wet.
And you'd be wet.
Like, and why would you want to do
time,
that?
It just...
That's why we invented airplanes, so we don't have to do that.
I don't think I'd go up that high. I think I'd just maybe 10 feet, a little bit.
You're going to run into, like, trees and
I mean,
shit?
I would watch out for trees.
Buildings.
All right.
Just houses.
I'd have to go up a little bit higher. Just, okay.
Buses.
Not above skyline.
Okay.
Not above timberline.
Wait,
those
are
above timberline. They are there.
Timberlines on the mountains where the trees stop growing.
I know. That's where I want to fly. I don't want to go in the city. I'll go at timberline where there aren't any trees for me to fly into.
So you're just going to be cold.
The
it's cold
time.
Up there.
The whole
trees
time.
Don't grow up there.
I know. It's timberline.
Anyway,
we have a guest with us, by the way.
Yes.
We're gonna talk about him because he's sitting here. This is Officer Johnny that we talk about. He helps us with our sound. We're at the library again, so
yeah.
Let's just get to our book.
So what did we read?
We read Skinwalker by Faith Hunter, narrated by Christine Vaughn.
Yep, that's as close as I think I can get to her last name.
The end.
We did read that.
All right. Clit's notes.
So, short version, Jane Yellowrock is a skinwalker who is also a rogue vampire hunter. She takes this job. She has to track and find a rogue vampire in New Orleans and kill him because he is terrorizing the city. She goes down there, begins her investigation. Some things come up that maybe this isn't just a vampire she's hunting. He might also be, like her, a skinwalker. Or a bad skinwalker, also known as a liver eater. So over the course of the investigation, she meets lots of cool new people, mostly vampires. Some are not.
What?
I don't know. Oh. She's also kind of trying to figure out who and what she is, because mm-hmm. she's never met another skinwalker, and nobody seems to know what she is. Everyone in the paranormal world knows she's not human. They're like, what are you?
Mm-hmm.
But they can't exactly figure out what she is. She's not a witch, but she's not a vampire. And those are the only two paranormal creatures that have
surfaced
come out publicly
in this,
so
yeah.
that humans are aware of them. And then by the end of the book, she succeeds and kills the thing. Yay.
And that's it.
That's the story.
A nutshell, which is I mean, this book was 14 hours long.
Yeah.
And I have to preface this episode with, I mean, really, I preface every episode
all episodes
of this. Is that Saylet forgets and doesn't remember half the book. But I also listened to this really fast and in within 2 days because I had jury duty and I forgot to listen.
Yeah.
So, well, I did have a harder time to follow this book again.
I think there was a unique challenge to this book because when Jane, so as a skinwalker, she can take on the form of other animals. Or, yeah, animals. Mm-hmm. I don't think anything other than animals. But she transforms, and when she is in a particular, her beast form, which is a mountain lion or jaguar.
Panther.
It's a mountain lion. It's anything. The beast has a mind of its own and talk and speech of its own. Mm-hmm. Like it has, she has her own presence and her own thoughts. So during those transitions or during that period, the story is told from her perspective, from this beast perspective.
She calls her beast.
I don't have anything else to say about
beast.
That's what she calls her. So it's not in like whole sentences and narrative structure. It's it's told as if an animal would like sense it, like through an animal mind kind of.
Yeah.
Because things are related to the animal's understanding of the world as opposed to a human's.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a challenge because that piece of the book is told in a different format. And so it's hard to follow, I think.
They're incomplete sentences and they're plenty, one right after the other. It's like, we go sleep, want food, hungry now. And it's like I get it. I understand that the animal is talking, that the beast is talking, but I was like,
And it does make it challenging.
It's very challenging. And I think specifically for me, because I had to read it at 1.6.
Well,
it was.
Have to.
Yeah, I had to in order to finish it, in order to record this episode. Otherwise,
that's
I'd be
true,
like, Kalina, what happened? But I think listening to it faster was harder in that sense.
Oh, for sure.
If it was slower, one, it would translate better to my slow brain, and two, it wouldn't be so clunky, because that, to me, it sort of turned me off. I had a hard time getting into this book.
I think that technique probably works a lot better on the written page.
That makes sense.
That it's easier visually to see this. I'm sure it's probably italicized when the beast is talking versus...
It's only available on Audible.
There's no way it's only available.
It says that.
No.
It does.
The audio might be only available on audio, on Audible.
Does that mean that it's not?
I think that means it wasn't released as like a CD.
Oh.
There's a lot of Audible books that are only available on Audible.
I see.
Because they're Audible Productions as opposed to.
I see.
Some other publishing company producing a Audible audiobook.
I thought it meant this is not written anywhere.
No.
That makes more sense. Okay.
I mean, I could look it up, but
no.
I'm 90% sure that
Please
this
don't.
Is also a
you.
Written book.
I believe you. That's such a stupid thought.
No, it's not. No, that's not a dumb thought. That makes sense. But yes, the next layer of that is the audio is only available through Audible.
Got
you can't
it.
Buy it in other places.
Okay.
But I think that, yeah, this technique, this narrative technique probably works a lot better on page. Because you get to see the beast is being probably, like I said, probably italicized so that it's offset and different than her thought. And you can just read the sentences quickly as opposed to like hearing them.
And you're forming and developing that character yourself. So then you've already created what you want it to sound like, what you want it to look like. So I could see that for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
But I still liked this book. There were challenges to it, but I really enjoy the character. I think that Jane is fascinating and I want to know more about her. And her world, because she doesn't even know what she is. And she thinks she's a lot older than any of her memories. She, like, her backstory is that she walked out of the forest one day around the age of 12.
Which she thought was 12.
Mm-hmm. You know, well, the state thought she was 12.
Yeah, what they thought was 12.
And she was put into a girl's home and doesn't know anything before that.
Yeah.
But now she's starting to pick up a lot of things.
She's starting to get flashback memories or dreams. And starts seeing like her father, and she's from the Cherokee tribe, so she starts to learn more about that and about her shifting abilities. And she's super sassy, super badass. She's really good with guns and fighting and
motorcycles. And
she rides a Harley.
stabs people with things, mm-hmm. stakes and crosses. And
she's got great instincts, pretty long hair.
Yeah.
There's a lot of descriptions that happens in this book, which I kind of found to be a little bit too much. There was a lot of nature description, too much food description, or there were gory parts of this book of people just being ripped to shreds, which I get because you know.
And eaten. Were ripped to shreds and eaten by a predator monster.
Yes. Well, it's horrible. And, yeah, and the antagonist has like 15 different pseudonyms. He's like the skinwalker and the rogue.
He's the rogue and the liver eater and the skinwalker.
In the end, he's the skinwalker because she finds out that, well, he
kind of
destroyed. Well, he...
He was originally probably a skinwalker who ate a vampire.
Yeah.
And took a vampire form.
Yes.
And then started dying.
Oh, guys. Really, all we have to say is just check it out for yourself. I think we have conflicting... Yeah. Kalina really liked it. I like the culturalness of this book.
I love...
not a word. Like,
yeah.
You know.
Well, I love that the heroine is... Of, you know, she's Cherokee. She's not, so many of our books are white people. We're all just white people. So I liked that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, came to find out that the author is white, so I don't know how much of this is accurate now.
Sure.
Like, I worry that maybe her understanding of Cherokee culture is not correct. So some of it might not be, like, her stories of the skinwalkers and what that meant to the Cherokee Nation probably is not great.
Sure.
So that kind of, I didn't know that before we read the book, and that colored my opinion of it a little bit. I'd rather a story like this come from somebody with the history.
Yeah.
Of
that culture.
Of color.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We'll find somebody someday.
Someday.
With that. Yeah, because when we touched on some of the Cherokee parts of the book, the language or meeting the grandmother and the woman...
It sounded pretty authentic. I mean,
yeah,
I don't have any background, so I have no idea.
Yeah, me either. None.
But yeah, there is Cherokee language in it and stuff. So she had to get that somewhere. So hopefully she did her research really well. And,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
That's what we're getting. But mm-hmm. at the end of the day, it's all not real anyway.
That's true.
Because vampires. New Orleans is being run by vampires.
Well, apparently there's like elves and other stuff. It's true.
We should ask G.
We should.
Do vampires secretly run your town?
She would say no. But there'd be, like, real vampires there, and they would all just...
And she wouldn't even notice.
She wouldn't even notice. There'd be one sucking blood in the middle of the street, and she wouldn't notice.
She's not at all.
She's chi.
Yeah.
So, spoiler, there's no sex in this book.
No.
It's not paranormal sexiness.
It's definitely on the romance, but the chaste romance spectrum of... Of hot, sexy books.
Yeah, because throughout this book, she's got a lot of potential suitors that you're thinking, oh, is it going to be him? Is it going to be him? Is it going to be him? At one point, maybe you thought it was going to be her, but she turned that down right away. You just didn't know. And so the teasing throughout the whole book was really nice. But
well, the vampire culture seemed to be pretty high, like overtly sexual,
mm-hmm.
as mostly it is in these books.
Yeah.
But there still just wasn't. There wasn't any sex. There was a lot of teasing. She had, like you said, a couple of guys, about three, that mm-hmm. there were really some teasy scenes where there was hot chemistry mm-hmm. and, like, sexual tension between them. But like, at the end of the day.
Tight pants and dancing.
Just
and yeah.
And walked end of away the day. And nobody had any sex.
Nothing happened.
And most people were torn to shreds by the end of the book
That's
anyway.
True.
So they were in no position. They were... Blood loss was all over the place.
It was pretty gory.
First, there's Rick,
mm-hmm.
who she has nicknamed
Joe. Which, I mean, this is all tying back to Chi, our friend in New Orleans anyway, because she nicknames all of her guy friends, and they're all named Boy. And then there's Tom,
who is she calls the troll.
Which he hated at first, but now he loves.
She really liked Tom.
Yeah. And then there's Leo, who is now the master
he doesn't have
a
nickname.
No.
He just gets to be Leo. I guess if you're the master of the city, you don't get a nickname.
There's a sense of respect there that maybe you don't get that.
She doesn't have any respect.
No, she doesn't care. She's so super sassy and just like, I don't give a shit. And then there's Bruiser, who is Leo's number one.
Like right-hand man.
Yeah.
And his name is George.
I thought his name was George, and I thought I made that up.
No.
I almost wrote it down. I was like, what the fuck? That's not his name.
It is his name.
Oh.
His name is George.
Something I was right about, and I didn't fucking write it down. Look at that. Well,
so,
there you go.
But Rick is kind of like the player character. He seems to be very flirtatious and has We know he's already sleeping with somebody else, but he's also really seeming to be pursuing Jane pretty hard.
He is, but at the same time, I think it's because he
secretly
sort of wants the job that she's been hired to do.
Well, it's because he's an undercover cop who needs to fucking pursue her because he has to understand what's going on.
Yeah, but for all we know, he really is interested. He's injured.
He seems like he is.
By the end of the book. And is
he is also almost dead, so we will have to look into the next book to see whether that has any fruit to bear.
Yeah.
I think my favorite was Bruiser / George.
Oh, he was
that's who I wanted to end
favorite.
Up with.
Totally.
And if it doesn't happen, I'll be very angry. No.
I think it's going to be Leo.
No. Yeah. I say no to that. He's mad at her.
Leo. He's the master vampire of this city.
But he's mad at her. And I don't like that.
He's mad at her.
I don't like that mix.
She's going to get through to him and be like, dude, I didn't fucking kill your son. Your son was already dead. And he's going to get over it and be like, I love you. Let's dance.
I think it was his French accent bothered me.
He was really Frenchy.
And I was just like, no, this isn't sexy.
You don't think French is sexy?
No.
No?
No.
I think French is sexy.
No.
I think the sexiest is Irish, but I think French is sexy. Oh, no? Am I just opening the junk drawer? Is that what's happening?
Like, I like all the bad accents.
Not Ruski. I do Ruski.
No, that one's terrible.
No.
I don't know.
Are you not an accent guy?
I like some, but... No, I don't know.
I love all of the accents from the romance languages. Like, those are all really, really sexy. But I think French is sexy.
I don't.
I think Spanish is sexy.
British is sexy.
British is pretty sexy. Scottish, if you can understand what they're saying.
That one's hard. That one can be challenging for the ear. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
I think that's funny.
But yeah, I didn't like Leo. I didn't like Leo's character.
I'm willing to bet it's Leo.
I don't want to. Then I won't read the books.
I want it to be Bruiser. I feel like these are kind of like the Anita Blake Vampire Hunter series, where you meet the character, you start to learn what she does as her job, and then as the books start developing, you eventually start getting into the love scenes. Because it's really until like the second or third book for Anita that she gets to fucking bone Jean-Claude and
mm-hmm. Well, it's like that, or... Rochelle Mead's succubus series, like mm-hmm. Georgina. I mean, because she is a succubus, we get more sex with her earlier, but it's still about her developing those relationships with the main characters. Mm-hmm. I mean, she's doing her job throughout the book, which is sex, but it's not the same. Like, I mean, all of these, like even Charming, we didn't get any sex in that book because it's the first in a book that's really focusing on the character mm-hmm. as opposed to a group. Like so many of our other series, it's like, here's seven main characters. And each book is about one of them.
It's always seven.
Meeting their fated mate.
That's probably another reason why you don't like this one. Or you do like this one.
I do, because there's no fated mates.
There's no fated mates. There's no eternal,
there's no
you
fate.
Belong to me.
None of these people are even immortal.
That's
half
true,
the vampires died.
They're not immortal. No. That's funny.
Yeah.
I got to read between the lines on a lot of these books be like, that is why Kalina likes these books. Makes sense.
These are the things that she has problems with in all the other books.
Yeah. No. But anyway, going back, I think it is going to be Leo, but I want it to be Bruiser. Yeah. It's going to be hot.
I mean, it seems like they had such a good connection, her mm-hmm. and George. They I don't know. I really like George.
I think out of all of them, besides Joe, she described him the most. At the parties that they went to, what he was dressing, how he reacted with her, how he, you know, spoke with her and treated her, really, because he's always been sort of the same with her, whereas everybody was a little bit different with her in the beginning.
Yeah. And I just didn't trust Rick from the beginning. I felt he was very untrustworthy.
Yeah.
I mean, finding out at the end that he had been an undercover cop the whole time explains that feeling, because you know he's hiding something.
Sure.
You're like, what is he hiding? I just don't know what. Mm-hmm. You're like, is it that he's working for good guys or bad guys?
Right.
Turns out good guys, but that's okay. But he still comes off as, like, I think he's supposed to be, like, flirtatious and sexy, and it, to me, is, like, asshole.
Well, I think the number one reason for that is because the woman that he's sleeping with is having an affair on her husband. Like, that subliminally is...
That I went, oh, you're an
you're
asshole.
You're an asshole. Because it would be different if, like, he didn't know she was married. But she's the fucking wife of the mayor.
Yes.
Is it the mayor?
He's sleeping
the governor?
With the mayor's wife.
He knows that she's married.
Everyone knows she's like, in the newspaper as the mayor's wife.
So, and it's... he goes in there and tries to protect her from the skinwalker, and he gets attacked, or she gets attacked by a skinwalker, and he goes in there to protect her, and she, like, takes off and disappears. We have no idea what happens to her. So
yeah, there's a weird storyline plot about she's buying up land from vampires, but in league with the skinwalker somehow, and the mayor's trying to get the swampland turned into usable land that he's going to build a stadium for the Hornets.
I'm hiding behind my mic because I don't remember any of this.
It's a very minor plot point that is confusing and then goes away. And I go, okay, I didn't need to know any of that. I don't think that's helpful. But yeah, somehow that's probably going to come back in the next book. Anna's going to be around doing that shady land dealing shenanigans.
She doesn't sound like a really good person. So
I should say we don't know her.
No, she sucks.
All we know about her, she's cheating on the mayor and also somehow sleeping with the skinwalker.
she slept with the skinwalker and
Rick.
Is sleeping with Rick.
It just, they didn't, she wasn't painted in a good light.
No.
For this there's,
book. So yeah, there's.
And shady land deals. We know three things about her.
See, those are all bad things.
Yeah. No, I don't know.
I don't like her.
But and that also then colors our opinion of Rick.
Yes.
Undercover cop sleeping with the mayor's wife. What is that? What book did we stumble into? This
sounds like we stumbled into a book
like
with
a criminal, like
multiple suitors, and they all have different backgrounds.
Oh man.
So
yeah.
Do you want to go? Do we want to get into our kiss and tell?
I think that's the only place we have to go.
Yeah, we really don't have much else to talk about. Do we? So, what do you want to do first?
Yeah, kiss and tell first.
All right.
So the only scene that's very romantic, like sexy, is the dancing scene.
Which one?
the one where she's
she does
dancing,
the salsa,
like salsa tango-y with,
tango with both of them,
George, and then with Leo.
Okay,
yeah, not the dancing at the club scene, because that was very short, and then a vampire almost killed somebody, and it was not sexy.
Okay,
and she was dancing alone.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas at the party, so she goes to this vamp party because one of the vamp's son is becoming his heir and getting
Leo's
married.
Son.
Another person who's now a vampire.
Amity. Yeah.
There's all this vamp politics happening. And so she's at the party and she isn't having a good time, but she's eating and drinking. And then she goes off into like a separate room by herself.
Bruiser.
But she can hear. No, she's by herself.
Oh.
And but there's music. Like she can turn up or down the volume of the music. Did you catch this?
No.
It was very weird to me. I couldn't decide where she was.
Nope.
But somehow like. But she wasn't listening to the string orchestra because she didn't like that music. So she went into a room and, like, put on the radio or something.
Okay.
I don't know. I could get this wrong. It's possible. But so she's kind of dancing by herself with drinking champagne. And that's when George comes in and takes away her drink. And they start dancing.
Okay.
And they start doing salsa or tango.
It's one of those. She did a... I think
it
she did the
matter.
Slower one with him,
I
although
know.
I don't really think either one of them is slower than the other. We don't know.
I don't know ballroom dancing. I can't say.
I don't know.
But anyway, and it's so she like they're really, you know, they're completely involved in it and like just paying attention to each other. And at first she starts, she has some like comment about like leading and because she starts off by leading and like taking him into the dance and then he takes over and leads and, you know, flips her around and does all the turns and stuff. And then as soon as it ends, Leo's there clapping for her, for them. Mm-hmm. And then he takes over and does like a sexier dance.
Yeah. And that's the extent of the sex.
Yay.
Nothing happened.
Well, then they growled at each other.
Oh, yeah, they growl at each
at
other.
At the end of the dance.
They do. And her beast.
I don't know why.
Her beast growls because she just like, go get laid by one of these guys. Her inner beast is like, come on. She just wants that. Well, she just wants to procreate and have kids.
Yes.
Kittens.
The cat inside her wants kittens.
Well,
but she doesn't seem to want kittens.
No, I don't think so. But, I mean, she took her kittens away from her. Quote unquote.
That's a whole side story about maybe what happened like hundreds of years ago.
Yeah.
But I don't
of how she acquired the panthers.
That's
the
all like for future
body.
Books to explain because this book didn't really do it justice. So
we
thought we'd talk about sexy dancing.
Yes. And I
don't like dancing.
I don't like dancing.
I know you hate it.
Well, I'm not a very good dancer. I'm an awkward person. Like I said, I don't do the sexy thing very well. I'm just such an awkward, like such an awkward person. I'm not a good dancer as far as like regular dancing to regular music, hip hop or country or anything like that. But you throw a Cambodian song on me, I'm fucking on the floor and I'm dancing. But that's because it's almost kind of like line dancing in a way, but it's Cambodian music. Throw me a fucking classical dance, then I'm on the floor doing that too. You know, I taught classical dance. That kind of dancing I can do. If it's been rehearsed to perform, I can do that. But as far as just like freestyling, and I can't even explain it. I'm trying to do it in this chair and I look like an idiot.
No, you don't.
It's like, it's like, you know, I just, Johnny's like, wait, are she? I'm just not.
We'll be bad together.
Oh, okay, good. I just don't feel like I'm really good at it. I think maybe if I practiced or learned moves, then I could probably do it. But for the most part, I just stand there and click my heels together and wish to go home.
Well, I think that part of that is that you know, everyone thinks, well, not everyone. A lot of people think they're good. But a lot of people also just think they're terrible. But it's not something you can be really terrible at. It's just moving. It's just moving to music. And I think you should get over the idea that you look bad and stupid, because that's not part of it. You should just have fun and enjoy it. I
sure.
like it. Now, it's hard for me because of my anxiety. I don't ever want to go out and be in a public place like that, because it's crazy bad. But then once I'm there, I'm happy and it's fun.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it does. Like, I like going out and dancing with my guy. It's fun. And and we have a good time doing it. It's something he loves. And he definitely does it more often than I do. I
mm-hmm.
don't. That's a big social anxiety issue about crowds and mm-hmm. loud spaces. But I think it's fun. And I do think it has stuff to do with building up that rapport and getting that sexual energy out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah, and there are all those different, the thing you hear about, like, if a man can dance, then you know that he's really good in bed, or the same with a woman, if she can move her hips, and she's, like, you know, just in.
Mm-hmm. I feel like those are overly simplified ideas, too, but.
It may be true in my case. I just don't think I'm good at anything.
Well, that's so. Just self-deprecation, too, and it's extreme.
That's true. I just want pity. People, write me a check for dance class. Yeah,
no.
But
well, and I do think part of it is you don't drink.
I don't.
And I definitely have more fun and it's easier to dance when I've been drinking.
That's true.
Like, if I haven't been drinking, dancing is a lot harder.
Oh, you loosen up a lot when you're drinking.
Well, yeah.
And you dance like a motherfucker and it's fucking awesome. I love it. I love when you literally let your hair down. Literally.
Yeah. And my hair is always up in a tight bun until I drink.
So then you'll pull it down and you're just. No, when we were in Austin and we went bar hopping, is that what that was?
Yeah. That is the equivalent of bar hopping,
the
two places we went.
I don't even know words. And you guys were dancing and loving it, and it was amazing. The night.
I like it.
Yeah.
I think it's good. And I think it's good for relationships.
It's a good exercise.
Fun. It's a great exercise. Fantastic cardio workout program.
Oh, yeah. I'm all for that.
Just dance around. It's also a very, I think it's a mood elevator.
Mm-hmm.
It's like whenever I'm in a really bad place or I'm feeling really sad, if you put on like pop music, like some of that like really bubblegum poppy stuff and just like move around to it, it really helps. It like, elevates your mood and you don't feel as sad or you know, like, it just kind of reminds you that there's silly happiness in the world.
Oh yeah, it's not like I won't
I know
do
it. I know
I will dance. I'm not gonna say you're gonna like what you see, but I will dance. I'll get up there and I'll do it. Like, throw on a bunch of fucking 90s music and we're fucking there. I mean, that's usually what we do anyway. All of a sudden the Spice Girls are up and we're like, oh, you know. So
all the music from our childhood.
Yeah, so there's that, which it'll lead into our fun fucked fact. And this is an article from The Thrillist, or Thrillist.com. And it's called 7 Ways Dancing Makes You Better in Bed. And if you're interested, you could just go there and read it all yourself.
Sure.
But I'm just going to read a tiny bit of it.
That'd be boring.
Dance is the drug of ancient gods, giving us the freedom to move, contort, and shape our beautiful bodies. Dance is sex with clothes on. But how can we translate dancing into being a better lover? Actually, the act of dancing naturally improves your love life without you even having to think about it, and here's how. 1. Dancing gives you a sense of rhythm. 2. Dancing hides inhibitions way better than alcohol. That's awesome.
Or you need alcohol for all of it.
Right. 3, dancing invigorates the body with energy. 4, dancing builds self-confidence.
Yes.
5, dancing brings out playfulness. Agreed. 6, dancing allows us to be different than our real selves.
Oh, for sure.
And 7, dancing brings out our best.
There you go. Start dancing more.
Yeah. After a night of dancing, most people feel absolutely euphoric. It's obvious why. Dance lets us be who we really want to be. So connect with your true selves and just dance the shit out of dancing.
Dance the shit out of dancing. Well, I also think there's something to like music and like our old primitive humans and telling stories through music and like through dance that really gets lost in modern day.
Before there was language, you moved.
Exactly.
Not like that. Don't
exactly.
You're
that
not
going to
get
sneak.
Anybody with that move. Don't do what Sayla just did.
This is a podcast. I can't see you.
Johnny keeps missing it. I'm doing it on purpose. You're not.
Don't make
me do it again. I can do it. We'll just like make up stuff around
this. There we go.
We
got it.
We all did it.
We did.
All right.
Sexy beast we are. So.
Okay.
No. So I think the tie-in with this is that Jane loves to dance. And you can't, from her personality, I wouldn't have thought that she likes to dance. Because to me, dancing is a fun thing that you kind of let loose and you're not so uptight and all that. And while Jane isn't really uptight, I didn't know that if I specifically liked her as a character. She was super sassy and super badass and strong and everything. But there were times where she was just so snarky with certain people or a lot of people that I felt was unnecessary. Like, one time she was calling Leo to come help or call for help or something from Leo. And instead of saying, hey, Leo, can you come over and help, blah, 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 she says, okay, Leo, if you don't want blah, blah, blah to fall off a cliff and break their arm and drown in the water and get eaten by sharks and get, you know, shat out and become seashells, come over and help this person. Like, all she had to do was literally say, come over and help so-and-so. But she, I don't understand the sass, and I don't get it. I mean, I think her personality coming out as a sexual being is going to be definitely written better in the next coming books. I just didn't see it here. Because when we read these books, I find myself attracted to not only, obviously, the men that we're quote-unquote sleeping with, but also the women that we're sharing our fictional bodies with. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I like to tie myself in with being the main character. I like to see that. But I couldn't connect with Jane, and I really wish that I could have. And I know you have a different opinion about her.
I do. I think that her history explains a lot of the way she is. So having zero memory of your youth or childhood, and we find out in the book that it actually is probably zero memory of like a couple hundred years.
Yeah.
It's not just 12. But like walking out of the forest at 12, having had, we're not sure yet, but something traumatic must have happened.
Mm-hmm.
And she's all of a sudden found a feral, non-English, non-verbal child, like a 12-year-old child, put into a group home where she's bullied and no one knows how to treat her or talk to her because she's learning socialization.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not an ideal place to learn socialization.
Sure.
A girl's home,
mm-hmm.
like with a bunch of other orphans.
Right.
Who probably don't have the best social skills to begin with. Because they've all been abandoned.
Sure.
And then also knowing that you have this weird power that isn't the same as everybody else. Like, it's not the other ones that have come out. It's not witch or vampire, which are public knowledge and also being, like, registered, kind of, like, monitored by the government. And so she has to, like, I'm sure she, like, we don't get all this. I mean, this is all stuff that I just picked up through the book. It's not explained a lot. But I'm figuring that develops your personality in a certain way, that there's a lot of defense mechanism. That is what her snark is. It's her putting off people before she has to, like, get close to anyone.
Sure.
Because why would you want to when you think you're, A, the only one of your kind, and, B, you don't have a family or a history. And then, on top of it, you add that she's a rogue vampire hunter. So this is the first case she's taken where she's working kind of directly for the Vampire Council. It sounds like usually her past cases have just been like new blood families that are killing uncontrolling. And so she goes in and kills, you know, like wipes out the rogues. Whereas this one, she's actually being called in and has to work directly with what she keeps calling civilized vamps. Because these are vamps that live in the world and live in society without drawing negative attention to themselves. Like, right. Everyone in New Orleans knows who they are and knows that they're there and they're running their businesses and living their lives and they're not being hunted because they're not out of control. Whereas this rogue is out of control and is killing people. So I think she's unused to working, like, prior to this case, she just kills vampires. But now she has to somehow work with vampires and also still kill a vampire. Right. So I think she's trying to walk that line, mm-hmm. but also doesn't want any of the quote-unquote civilized vamps to take her as weak or prey. So she's immediately offending all of them. You're not wrong. She is so snarky. And she, like, refuses to use the words they want her to use. Like, she says vamp all the time and they don't want her to call them vamp because it's a very offensive term. And she, like, gives them all fake names and calls Tom troll all the time. And everyone's like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
And so, I think she's very prickly and very difficult to get to know. And I think part of that is she doesn't know herself. And she has this weird dual soul, this beast that lives inside of her that is really actually a separate soul of another animal that she's struggling with. I think she has to, over the course of the books, find all that out. And she's going to become a more stable, whole character.
Yeah.
Because right now she's really pieces of a character.
And
I think.
And that's a really good point. I'm really glad that you explained it that way. And that opens me up to her a little bit more, too. That's exactly what I see it as. I see it as a defense. It's just a wall to block out any type of emotion that's going to attack your being, one of which you don't even realize of yourself. Mm-hmm. So she's trying to get to know herself as well as other people around her.
Constantly in fear that if they do find out what she is, that she's going to be, like, locked up or something. Because she doesn't really know exactly what she is, but she doesn't want to tell anyone. Like, she keeps trying, like, immediately all of them know she is not human. But they don't know what she is.
Right.
And so she's playing that game of, like, of course I'm human. Maybe I just have weird magic. Or maybe I just used a witch to make a spell for me to let me do this thing. You know, she doesn't want anyone to see her shift or change.
Right.
You know, there's only three people that know what she is. They're her friends in, I don't know, wherever she was from before she went to New Orleans.
Yeah.
Somewhere in the mountains.
And I can see that. And I think that's totally justified. I have a very different personal opinion about it. I think it's just because I'm so open. And I can't block away feelings. I'm a feeling person.
Yes, you are. And there's definitely times in this book where if each of the characters had just been slightly more trusting of each other, they would have solved shit a lot fucking faster.
Yeah.
But instead they're like, no, and I'm not going to tell you anything, even though I'm being chained to a wall for months at a time. And I'm like, well, if you had just said something, someone would have fucking stopped that.
No, I understand her saying, I don't want to explain that I'm a skinwalker, that I can take on all of these different forms.
Oh, yeah, she cannot tell people that.
And I'm with her on that. But is the snarkiness and the sass really necessary? I mean, I know that she's a loner. She just wants to do... She's there to do her job. She's not there to make any friends.
Nope.
But at the same time, you have to make relationships. And while you don't have to be, like, somebody that gets walked all over because you're the nice guy, you could still not be so bitchy. I don't know. I just have a real problem with sass. I don't like it. Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, well, she's sassy. The thing with her that I had the hard time with, it wasn't her sass, but it was not once, but many times in the book, she would be thinking thoughts and then she would say them out loud without knowing. And the people around her would be like, what do you mean by that?
And she's like, did I just say that out loud?
I guess we're going to have that conversation now. And it's like, that's a dangerous lapse of control. To not be able to keep your thoughts in your head.
Oh, yeah.
To have them spill out of your mouth is...
Especially
when
they're
dangerous.
That snarky.
When you're hiding all the secrets of who you are. You can't accidentally be like, and then I turned into a panther. What? Did I say that out loud?
I just flew overhead for 3 days straight.
I liked it when she was a bird. Owl was pretty cool.
I missed that shifting scene, but then I realized that she was a bird after a while. It's like, oh, she's a bird now.
She was an owl.
Yeah.
But she ate a cat.
She did, and she says she's particularly fond of cats, except that she had to eat him.
Well, the owl wanted to eat the cat.
Well, yeah.
That's what owls do. They
so
kill
then
things.
Is the panther, the beast, and her in the owl? Because when she goes back into her form, her human form, the beast comes back.
Mm-hmm. The panther's there. It's just extra suppressed when she goes into a different beast. Or it goes into a different form.
So she can't understand why the beast is permanently with her. Like, they just don't know.
Well, she knows now.
Oh, why?
Because she stole her.
But she stole the bird.
No. So, Okay. So as a skinwalker, she's a human Native American. She's Cherokee.
Uh-huh.
She's a human Cherokee. She was being trained by her father. She was a little girl, showing her how to skinwalk. In order to do that, you have to have a DNA material of the animal you want to shift into. So they usually kept, that's why they kept, she called them fetishes, but it,
right.
it was the bones
the
or like the skin.
Fragments of.
Little mm-hmm. fragments of an animal. And then you would use it to find, like magically find the DNA and change into that being. So she was a bobcat. Like she, that was her first change, was mm-hmm. a bobcat. And her father was a mountain lion. And we don't know what happened after that, but somehow she was running around. Her dad is dead. And she's running around as a bobcat alone. And she finds the frozen carcass mm-hmm. of a deer or something
yeah.
and she's starving and she starts to eat it. She knows she shouldn't because there's the mountain lion smell. This is obviously somebody else's kill.
Yep.
It's not hers. So the mountain lion shows up and kills her. As she is dying, she's scared and doesn't want to die.
That's right.
So she jumps into the body of the bobcat.
Right. Or the mountain lion.
That's right. The mountain lion. She was the bobcat. She leaves and she basically takes her soul into the bobcat.
The mountain.
The mountain lion.
And it's a panther.
And it's also a panther. Whatever. No, but it's a mountain. Like, it does say in the book, they use another term. I don't, panther. But that it is common, it's currently commonly known as mountain lion. Call them
a mountain lion. Or a puma or a cougar.
Us Western white people call them mountain lions. The Cherokee didn't. They called
okay.
it a different name.
Okay.
But to us, they're mountain lions.
Well, that explains
so,
a lot.
She then spends, we don't know how much time, as a mountain lion fighting each other because the lion's alpha for a long time and is upset because she now has this human soul in her.
Mm-hmm.
And then we don't know all that time span, but at some point she ends up back, like they think that she has some vague memory that she might have gotten shot. Like hunters might have found her as the mountain lion and shot her.
Okay.
And she had to shift into human form to live. And that the last time she had been human was as a child.
Oh, got it.
So that's why she showed up hundreds of years later
as a 12-year-old.
12-year-old girl.
Of what they thought
or
was a 12-year-old.
Or however many
yeah.
decades later as a 12-year-old
yeah.
girl.
Okay.
And she didn't know English and she didn't know language and she didn't know social because
right.
she had been a mountain lion.
Forever.
But that's why she's slightly different than your average skinwalker because
okay.
she basically stole
a soul.
A soul.
Okay.
She stole the body so she could keep living because she was dying.
Okay.
But that's why her and her beast relationship is different because beast is a real
yes.
separate entity. But then when she became the bird, she just borrowed the bird form. She
see.
There's no bird soul.
That
in
makes
her.
Sense.
She
okay.
just take us on the bird form.
I was confused about that.
And then during that transition, the beast soul is suppressed a little bit more because
okay.
that's too many now. We got too many layers of
no.
things.
Just being the freaking owl confused me. And I was
well, how
like,
do
I
you know how
what
to fly?
To the beast. That's true. Your instincts take
I
over.
I guess. Yeah. That's a little nitty gritty. And that's also just Kalina's understanding of the book, which doesn't necessarily make it accurate.
No, that's okay. Your understanding was a lot more.
I had to go back a lot on this book
yeah.
and like re-listen to sections because I found it tricky to follow. I do think
I agree.
I would give the next book in this series a shot as a physical book first.
Oh, okay. Because they do those. It's
they
not
do.
Just audible.
They're not just audible. They do also have written books. I mean, I thought the narrator was good. I think she
oh,
did
yeah.
a really great job.
I liked her.
I didn't like, you know, have a problem with her or anything.
Mm-hmm.
I just feel like I want to see this book, kind of want to see how that, the two different souls thing shows up on the page.
Yeah.
To kind of distinguish them.
It's written differently.
And if that's easier to read and understand than it is to hear. Because not everything makes a great audio translation.
No, it doesn't.
Some books are like not good at
it. And we've talked about that too.
Yeah.
I bet it would be. Let me know.
I will.
If you do.
I will.
Yeah.
All right. So we should rate this book.
Oh, sorry. I don't know why you're looking at me.
Well, you're the only one
is
with
it because
any preparation this week. I didn't even have my
notebook. Just because I have my book does not mean that say let's prepare.
It is absolutely.
No, I apologize for talking in a third person. I don't know why I do that. Is that a third person? No.
Yeah.
It's a first person. It's a first person. No, is it? What is it?
It's third.
I don't know why I do that.
It's fine. We've done it a couple times this episode. I said Kalina doesn't do that. And it's you know what? It's all right. It's
but
a quirk.
It's what we do. Oop. I didn't
break.
Things. I didn't break anything.
Johnny.
Oh no. All right, so, ooh.
Well, there's no sex to rate.
There is no sex.
I don't know how to rate that.
I don't want to give it a zero because there weren't any sex. I don't think that's fair.
It's not fair.
So.
I was intrigued by, like, the flirty stuff. I thought it was well written. I still strongly call this a romance. I think that there's, like, different levels. This is that it's a romance in that the relationships are building. And the way the characters are set to interact and the sexual tension between them is being developed by the author. So it is romantic.
Okay.
Like, it has a growing romance. Now, we don't get anywhere with it in this particular book.
Sure.
But it's growing in that way. It's not just a standalone fantasy book.
Okay.
Because it has these romantic elements of a relationship developing.
Brooding.
And brooding and sexual tension. There's a lot of sexual tension between her and, like, three guys.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know how to rate that. Because it's not bad. It's good. It's just not fulfilling.
Did it give you blue balls?
Maybe. Maybe we give that a four.
So I just went through and looked at what we were rating other things to, because there are other books that I feel like we rated too high.
Oh, yeah.
And ones that we might have rated too low, not thinking about our reading system.
We're terrible at
We're actually really bad at this. Like, I think I rated Deadly Alchemy a little bit lower than I probably should have.
Yeah, it was a good
book. That was a good book. And I liked it. But for some reason, the rating kind of threw us off. And we were like, ooh, I guess we have to give it this one. I think we should have given it something higher.
Yeah.
So. Because I don't want four to be a bad number.
I don't think it should be either.
It's a medium number. Four, five, and six are medium. I mean, six is sizzling. Four is blue balls.
Yeah.
It's not a one. I didn't have...
It was not a waste of my time.
No. It was not... I didn't have a... I mean, I guess I had a limp dick. And there was no dry humping in this book, so can't say it was that either. But it's just... It's hard reading a sexy book without sexiness.
It really is. But overall,
story-wise,
I think it was a good book.
Okay, so what do you give it?
I give it a six.
Okay.
Like, the book as a whole gets a six. I would like more sex.
Sure.
Mostly because that's why we read books.
Mostly so we have something to talk about on this podcast. So it's not like we're just sitting here not talking about what we're supposed to be talking about on this podcast.
But, I mean, like, there was some good flirtatious scenes that were exciting.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, four on the sex scenes.
Oh, you're going to rate the sex.
I don't know. It's hard to rate a sex scene when there's no sex. But I just don't know. I think it's a good book. I think the series probably has a lot of places to go.
Mm-hmm.
And she's a really cool heroine.
I think that there's definitely potential. And I always go back to Anita Blake because God knows why. But I think
Anita, so.
Yeah. So, like, I feel like this is going to be a story in that type of writing style. And that, I won't say genre, but, like, heroine with a job and a story to build on. Mm-hmm. Lovers to follow. So I don't want to give it anything low, but I can't give it anything higher because of what we gave the other books that actually gave us satisfaction. So I think I'm going to have to go with a four on this, which is blue balls. But it didn't give me blue balls because there was no sex. And I know that there was, like, teasing, but even that, like, the teasing was a little bit of flirtation here and there. There wasn't even any sexual banter.
Yeah, there was.
Was there?
Yeah.
Between who? I mean, mostly obviously
Rick.
Her.
It's mostly Rick.
Well,
and
I
her.
Guess between her and Rick. Rick really turned me off.
And she's in the vampire that called her in, Katie, is the madam of brothel.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was some sexual banter in the brothel too.
I feel bad because I want to like this book a lot, but I just can't do it. So I have to give it a four overall.
All right. I mean, that's your rating. You can give it whatever.
We can't have the same opinion. Otherwise, it would be so boring.
I
get that.
It would be so bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fine.
Well, hopefully our next one will be good or better for me, for you, for the world.
Do we even know?
We do know what the next one is. So for our next book, please join us for Secrets in Blood by Patricia D. Eddy, narrated by two different narrators. We have Aiden Snow and Grace Grant, which we're actually...
I'm real excited for this.
Me too. We talked a couple episodes about, well, not a couple.
Many episodes
way,
ago.
Way long ago about having more than one narrator, and we're going to have a male and a female, and it's going to be cool. I've never had one before, so it's going to be
I've had it in neat. Other books, but this is the first one for the podcast where we get to hear the different, I'm assuming, characters of the book. Narrated by the different narrators. Yeah. So it'll be fun.
I think so.
We're excited. So yeah, come back for that. And in the meantime, reach out to us on all the social media platforms. We are Dirty Books, and that's with three H's. You can find us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram.
Gmail.
I mean, that's not a social media, but no, you know, that's but just you an email. Send us emails. Talk to us. I don't respond.
I do. I respond.
I read them, and then I just ignore them.
And then she reads them, and it's left unread, and I don't think that anything is there, and then I forget to reply, and I feel bad for the people that have reached out to us. So...
That's my promise to you is I'll read what you sent us and ignore it.
And then days later, Sayla will find it and she'll reply.
Yep.
But also find us at our website, dirtybooks.com, and anywhere you would find podcasts, Google Play, iTunes, SoundCloud is where we're most likely to go.
I think all podcatcher apps will find us. So
yeah, unless there's like a fee that we have to pay to be on. Then
well, we're not on any of those. don't look for us there.
Yeah.
All right. Bye.
Say bye, Johnny.
Later, y'all.
All right, we're done.
Yeah, you've been listening to Reading Dirty Books with Galena and Saylet. Be sure to tune into the next episode with some more of your dirty books read to you. And if you're listening on a format allows you to give a rating, please do that for him.
We'd like to thank Jim Townsend for that sexy and wonderful introduction.